Wayne Butler, an alcoholic. I want to thank Sally for inviting me to participate in the first anniversary of the Stanford Beginners Group. How cool is this? To be invited anywhere, really. And to get to talk to Pastor Scott and Ron and meet so many of you good people and to be reacquainted with Sally's family. I'm going to tell a little story about Sally. I don't know if she's going to like it or not, but she's the first 4 foot 11 inch woman that ever hit me in the mouth in my life. She had to jump up to do it, too. I wasn't working with her just yet. I was just chatting with her, and she took exception to something I said to her, like, how are you feeling? And she socked me right in the jaw. And then after she asked me to sponsor, I said, well, who can not do that? The invitation is overwhelming. Not that she needed any emotional sobriety work at all. Here we are in her backyard. Before I get into my story, I just think it's so cool. I've been privileged to participate at a level beyond my wildest imagination for a guy who slept in a dumpster and crawled around railroad tracks and wished for someone to put me out of my pathetic misery. And the only recourse I had was Budweiser and some fine wine, like Ripple. Now, if you're under the age of 40, you think that's some movement in the water. The reason being, they closed that chemical plant down. But I did like Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill.
That goes by very, very fast. Like that. And the question for you and for me is, who are we? Because that's the question that keeps us going. Because all during our lives, we try to answer that question, who am I? And the first answer we live with is, I am what I do. And that's very real, you know. When I do good things, and when I have a little success in life, I feel good about myself. But when I fail, I just start getting a little low and depressed. And then I'm getting older, and I might say, I cannot do much, but look at the trophies. Look, I did a lot of good things in my life. Or look at my books, or look at my music I wrote, or look at my children, I educated them, look, I did something good. Or we might say, I am what other people say about me, what others say. You know, that's very, very powerful what people say about you. In fact, that sometimes is most important. People think well about you, you can walk around quite freely. But when somebody starts talking behind your back, or when somebody starts saying negative things about you, you suddenly might feel very, very sad. You know, and I remember speaking to thousands of people, and people say, that was wonderful what you said. There was one man who said, hey, he said, I thought it was nonsense. And that's the only man I remember. It seems as if when somebody talks against me or against you, that can cut deep into your heart. And when somebody in the morning says something about you that's really hurtful, somebody calls you stupid or so, it can stay with you the whole day and ruin your mood. You might also say, I am what I have. I am what I have. I'm a Dutch person. I have kind parents. I have a good education. I have a good talent. I have a lot of things. But as soon as I'm losing any of it, if a family member dies, or if my health goes, or if I lose the property I might have, then I can slip into inner darkness. And what I want you to hear for a moment is, quite often a lot of your and my energy goes into, I am what I do, I am what people say about me, I am what I have. And you know, when that's the case, our life quickly becomes like this. Because when people speak well about me, and when I have a lot of things, and when I do good things, I'm quite up and excited. But when I start losing, when suddenly I find out that I cannot do anything anymore, when suddenly I find out that people talk against me, and finally I discover that I lose my friends, I might slip into depression and be very low. And before you realize it, you and I are on a zigzag. Because when we are up, when these things are all right, when we are down, when we start losing out. And most of our work, mental work then, is to just stay above the line. And we call that surviving. We want to survive. We want to hold on to our good name, hold on to some good brother, as it were, at that death, you're going to die after all. And you know, when you live this kind of life, with all these ups and downs, the end is death. And when you are dead, you're dead. Nobody talks about you anymore. You don't do anything anymore. You can't do anything anymore. You lose it all. And that little life of you and of mine adds up to nothing. But what I want to say to you today is that this whole thing is wrong. That is not who you are, and that is not who I am. That's what the demon said to Jesus when he went to the desert. He said, turn these stones into bread and show you can do something. Jump from the temple and let people catch you so they speak well about you. Kneel in front of me and then I will give you a lot of protection. Then you are loved because you do something, people speak well about you, and you have something, and everybody is going to love you. And Jesus said, that's a lie. That's the greatest lie that makes you and me enter into a relationship of violence and destruction. But I know who I am. I know who I am. Because before the Spirit sent me to be tempted, the Spirit came upon me and said, you are the beloved child. You are my beloved son. Of you, my favorite. That's who you are. That's who I am. And Jesus heard that voice. You are my beloved. On you may favor us. And it was that voice that he clung to as he lived his life. And people praised him, and people rejected him, and people said Hosanna, and people crucified him. But Jesus held on to the truth. Whatever happens, I am the beloved of God. And that is who I am. And that allows me to live in a world that keeps rejecting me, or praising me, or laughing at me, or spitting on me. I am the beloved. Not because people say I'm great, but because I am the beloved, even before I was born. And dear friends, if there's anything that I want you to hear this morning, is that what is said of Jesus is said of you. You have to hear that you are the beloved daughter and son of God. And to hear it, not here, but right here, to hear it, so that your whole life can be turned around. And listen to the scriptures. I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have written your name in the palm of my hand for all eternity. I have molded you in the depths of the earth and knitted you together in your mother's womb. I love you. I embrace you. You are mine, and I'm yours, and you belong to me. You have to hear that. Because if you can hear that voice that speaks to you from all eternity to all eternity, you will live life
will become more and more the life of the beloved. But that's who you are. And then you start discovering that all that you do here is nurtured from the knowledge that you are the beloved. And that's who you are. And then you start believing in this. That circle of knowledge will grow, become bigger and bigger and bigger until it cuts right into your daily life. You will still have rejections, and you will still have praise, and you will still have losses. But you live no longer as a person searching for his or her identity, but you will live it as the beloved. You will love your pain, and you will live your anguish, and you will live your successes, and you will live your failures as the one who knows who you are. And I want to give you a little word here. The voice that calls you the beloved is the voice of the first love. First one. John writes, love one another because God has loved you first. And the great struggle, and it's not easy, I'm not talking about something easy, is to claim that first love. You were loved before your father and your mother and your brother and your sister and your teacher loved you. If you've heard the story that Julian was talking about, but the story of rejection. The people who love us not always love as well. The people who care for us also wound us. And you might know from your own experience that those who often are closest to you, like your father, your mother, your children, your brother, your teachers, the churches, are also the ones who might hurt you most. How to live that? How to live the truth that in this world love and wounds are never separate. You can only live it when we always reclaim that first love. So that we can forgive those who love us poorly. But also so that we can recognize in the love that we do receive a hint or a glimpse of that first love that is needed. We can hold on to that. Every time you have a temptation to become bitter, to become jealous, to lash out, to feel rejected, and you go back and say, no, I am the beloved daughter of God. And even though I am rejected, that rejection should become for me a way to reclaim the truth. It should be like a pruning that helps me to claim more fully and deeply the truth of my beloved. And if I can hold on to that and live in the world, then I can be free to love our people without expecting them to give me all that my heart desires. Because God has created you and me with a heart that only God loves and satisfies. Every other love will be partial, will be real but limited, will be painful. And if we are willing to let the pain not make us bitter, prune us, and give us a deeper sense of our belovedness, then we can be free of Jesus and walk on this world and proclaim God's first love wherever.
You don't like the way we do. wasn't it yourself?
I left there shortly thereafter. There's no way.
Lisa, it's Willie Burns. I'm trying to hold the Jack. How's he doing? Well, I'm good. How's Jack doing? Well, that's good. No, it's all right. I'll call him back later on. Just let him finish his breakfast. All right, okay, I'll do that. Willie. Thanks, Lisa. Okay.
Would do that. And when I saw him, I mean, he had his nose. It was a nasal like mine, straight, but then he had golf balls.
Thank you. Has he finished his breakfast yet? Okay, thank you. So they're getting to know my voice, are they? They're getting to recognize my voice. No, no, not you, Lisa. Yeah, okay. Well, so what did I miss for breakfast? Now, listen, tell her that's not good enough. Now, come on. You don't want English toast, you want Scottish toast. Yeah, that's it. Well, it's the same as English toast, only we don't recognize English. Yeah. I remember in Mount Dora. Yeah, I remember it. That's all right, I don't care. Yeah, I ignore them as well. So, oh yeah, I'm at home. Jim left this morning. He's gone. Yes, he is. Yeah. He starts his, what do you call it? His first few days of indoctrination, he starts on Monday, okay? Then he's going to be on the road with an instructor for a while. I don't know how long that'll take. So, that's it. But it's a whole... Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sure. Oh, my God. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh well. Tell her to trade it in and buy a bicycle. Yeah. Jesus. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I get. Well, you won't go far without it. That's just for sure. You know. Yeah. So how are you feeling? I said, how are you feeling? Can you hear me? No, I can hear you all right. Right, how are you feeling? Oh, well, maybe, have you paid your phone bill? No, I'm just sitting here. I'm not moving. Maybe it's your ears. Maybe it's your ears. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, did you enjoy the weekend with Terry? No. Oh my God. Yeah. I don't think so. Maybe when I was drunk, but I don't think so either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, that's only resting between drinks. That's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to coming up to see you, okay? Yeah. Has Tommy called you yet? Yeah, from the coffee bar. Yeah, but he hasn't called you since you've been there. Right, okay, I'll give him a call and see how he's doing. Yeah, that's all right. He can afford it. Yeah. Right, okay. Well, look, I'll keep in touch with you anyway, okay? Right, okay, you take care. Well, you know, that's debatable. I mean, do you mean you're always there mentally or physically? All right, I'll speak to you soon. Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
And AA loafers sit, so we don't infect the seriously willing ones. So I'm in a shoebox, and Barney's at the coffee bar talking to his new sponsee, Tom. Tom has 14 days. Tom didn't have to help set up because he was working the steps at the coffee bar. I noticed him. I didn't like Tom. Because Tom's been getting Barney's attention now for 14 days. You hear me? I even complained to Barney about Tom, and Barney said, pray for him. So I did. And I came back 3 days later and said, Barney, God doesn't work. He said, well, I said, because you told me to pray for Tom, and I did. Nothing worked. He said, well, what'd you pray for? I said, I prayed for Tom to die. He said, well, maybe you ought to lower it just a little. 3 days later, I came back, Barney, God doesn't work. What are you praying for now? I just prayed for him to drink a couple. Now it's 14 days. And Tom. So Tom's over there working the steps with Barney while I'm in their shoebox. All of a sudden, the front door came flying open. This is the morning of November 8th, 1977. Front door comes flying open. We figured his wife did a drive-by. Because he came in and did a belly flop right on the floor. I mean, this guy was so drunk, I could smell it. Now, I'm not drunk. I'm having a lucid interval. I've only had 3 beers. I'm there. I see him flop. I see Tom's head come up, and I see Barney go like this. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. If Barney gets him, I'm screwed. Then it's Tom and him. I'm going to be left out. I jumped up out of my chair, and I went over and picked this guy up off the floor. Let's call him Jim. That was his name. Now, Jimmy was drunk. He couldn't smell my breath, and I'd only had 3 warm Budweiser's. I picked him up off the floor, and he could hardly stand. I mean, he was he had all his teeth, which bothered me at first. And he goes, hey. I said, hi. And I don't know what to say to him. I ain't talked to nobody for 5 years and 5 days. I've gone to meetings and drank and swore I would never say I'm an alcoholic, because I figured out the minute you say that, you join, and then they got dues and crap. So I've never said I'm an alcoholic, or I'm borderline personality, I'm a character disorder. I give you the litany of diagnoses I've got, but I only drink beer. So I'm holding on to this guy, and I notice Barney moving around his chair, and I go, I better get moving here. I said, hi, my name's Wayne B., because that's what Barney said 5 years ago. And then I said, I'm Wayne B., and I'm going to be your sponsor, because that's what Barney said. Or I said, I'm Wayne B., I'm an alcoholic. And after I heard those words come out of my mouth, I realized I was screwed, and I joined. And that's when I thought, well, I might as well go all the way, and it's okay, I'm going to be your sponsor, Jimmy. He says, what's that? I said, I thought to myself, well, I don't know, I didn't ask that question. So I said, shut up. He goes like this. At that point, Barney abandoned Tom at the bar, right? If I'd have known that's all it took, I'd have sponsored somebody 13 days ago. I sure as hell wouldn't have prayed, I'll tell you that right now. So he abandons Jim Tom at the bar, and he's heading for Jimmy. He's going to poach him. I know he is. I've seen that look before. Because I know I'm not qualified. So as Barney's approaching me, I pulled Jimmy behind me. Because, see, Jimmy's mine now. See, Jimmy don't know it, but he just signed a contract of his life. Barney comes up, and he gets close to my face, and he whispers. It feels like a shout. Dummy? I thought, hoping my sponsor didn't hear him call me that. Lose credibility before we get started. I said, what? He says, do you mind if I co-sponsor him? No! No, you can't! I have no co-sponsor! He's mine! That's what I thought, but I said, okay. See, Barney would have been totally in his right to take Jimmy away and say, I'm not qualified. But you see, Barney knows about the truth of AA. He knows how to rise above people's ego. He knows how to rise above people's judgment and opinion. He knows how to rise above fear. He knows that the God of AA is alive and well. So he knew it was perfectly okay for me to sponsor Jimmy. A lot of people didn't like it. But what he did was he helped me. I didn't know what I was doing. Of course I did. How would I know what I'm doing? I'm $3 sober. But I got Jimmy by three. Barney says to me and Jimmy, if you two clowns expect to stay sober, what time did I start? 10? See, an alcoholic man. Just when I'm having fun. If you two clowns expect to stay sober, you get out there and grab newcomers. Now, grab them. So I took him literally, grabbed them physically. See, there weren't very many treatment centers 34 years ago. There weren't a detox on every corner. There just was no place. We had to do our footwork. And so me and Jimmy didn't know where to go, so we had a group unconscious. And we started going to taverns looking for newcomers. We made the mistake of asking people that were playing pool that looked drunk that they would hit us. So, and I was still too light to fight and too thin to win. So we started waiting until they were asleep at the bar, and then we took them to the midnight meeting. And their head would pop up right about how it works. God, me and Jimmy sponsored about 37 people our first year. No, we did. We did. The old-timers had so much fun with us. They told us what to tell them. We did, and it worked. I can't explain it to you. I think it's spiritual. I don't think it's psychological. I don't think it's psychiatric. I think it's spiritual. And I think because our sponsor said, you do this, 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 and this, and we did what they said, it worked. And those guys think we kept them sober, and we let them believe that for a while until Barney shut his mouth off. Told the truth. I was sober a few minutes. I want you to picture this. I'm sober about 2.5 weeks. I still weigh 146 pounds. I've lost my welfare teeth. Yeah, that's why they give you welfare cheese. Keep them in. And my sponsor didn't believe in humiliating me. I was doing that myself. He would say things like, he invited me to a convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said there's going to be about 1,200 people there. It's Thanksgiving, 1977. He says, and he didn't say, Jesus, God, you smell. And you take 2 or 3 baths a day and you still stink. Why don't you get some clothes? Nothing like that. He says, do you mind if I buy you a new set of clothes? He says to me, you know, AA is a program of attraction and you're kind of a distraction. Boy, that's love, isn't it? So he took me to his favorite department store, Salvation Army. This is November 1977. Disco is out. But it's been donated to the Salvation Army. Remember those outfits? Oh, yeah. Rows and rows and rows of lime green double knit polyester leisure suits. So we bought one. Mine had bright yellow lining with dark green tennis rackets. We went to the shirt department and I thought I was getting a silk shirt. It was brushed polyester. really slick, bright yellow. It had animals around it. It had collars down to here. And it only had two buttons and none were missing. Remember those? So you show your bony shit. Then we went to the shoe department. The only 13.5-inch gunboats they had in supply were a pair of black and brown box toe Oxford platform shoes with the 2.5-inch sole and the 4-inch heel. Yeah. I went in 6'3" and came out 6'8", but I was happening, baby! He took me to that convention, stood me at the front door, and made me a greeter. Now we say we ain't laughing at you, we're laughing with you. But I was missing the part of with you. Because I wasn't laughing. And the members of AA that came to that town that weekend was a guy by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, Norm Alvey, Dottie Shore, Clancy I, Johnny H., and Tom Brady Jr. And every stinking one of them laughed at me. Johnny H. put me up against the wall and he says, "I hear you like to shoot at people in AA." And he starts patting me down. And I looked back at him and I said, "I heard you've been in prison, so watch where you pet, bucko." Boy, I sure showed you. Clancy made fun of me from the podium. It was great. I hated him for it. Found out it was really love and twisted. Dottie Shore kissed me on the head and I could feel her lips moving in laughter. And as Tom got by me, he waited until he got past me before he laughed. And I finally turned to my sponsor. "I'm going to clean it up for you guys." Tears were rolling down my face. And I said, "God damn it, Barney. Are they laughing at me?" He goes just like this. "Well, yeah. You're a sight to behold. You are a vision for you, pal." So let me give you a secret. If you learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never be left unamused. And then 7 years sober, I got clued in about that thing I told you about, that ghost that lives within me and alcoholics of my type. That thing that alcohol satisfies for just a little while. And then when you remove alcohol from the body of a man like me with a spiritual malady, the thirst for that effect produced by that illusion is so strong that I will deny anything that means anything to anybody. I'm not talking about a simple addiction. Because, see, I haven't had drink in my body for 7 years. I'm talking about what Father Ed Dowling told Bill Wilson. I suffer from a spiritual compulsion. I had bought into the disease concept that it's not my fault, that there's something out there doing something to me. And I've come to understand that I'm my worst enemy, that I conjure up almost all the sickness I have, that every depression I've ever had has been conjured up. Well, I've got clinical reason to be depressed, but I've had plenty of time to look through that, haven't I? So why do I still stay sick? It's because I'm longing for something, and I didn't know I could find it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And to wrap it up, I found it through the works of Father Ed Dowling, Dr. Harry Tebow, Reverend Sam Shoemaker, and how they ministered to Bill Wilson and got him through his spiritual depression when he was 14 years old. And I'm here to tell you, I haven't had a pill, powder, potion, or lotion in my body since. And I'm not telling you not to. I'm telling you that's my experience. And my depression lifted, and to this day has never come back. My mind no longer races out of control. And I've got that thing that I wanted from Bill Wilson, even though he's dead. I wanted that quiet mind. I wanted that peace of mind that he talked about in a calm place that nobody else can go to. Only I can get to it. The only way I can get to this process of 12 suggested steps. And it has to be through the process of having a sponsor in this hand and having a sponsee in this one. And then make sure they pass it on. Make sure they pass it on. Make sure they pass it on. Because that's the link in the great, great chain called the spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. And my life has taken on dimensions that I can't even begin to tell you about. You know, if you didn't know better, you would say that I was misdiagnosed with an IQ of 57. But at the time, that's the best I could come up with. That was a legitimate diagnosis. And you know, I've had people actually, what, I got 2 minutes? I've had people actually say to me, oh, they misdiagnosed you, you weren't retarded. I don't allow them to have that. I'm going to tell you why. That takes away from the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous put me in the position I'm in today. By allowing me to work with other alcoholics, I work with a lot of educated people. I mean, it gets in their way sometimes. But I work with an awful lot of alcoholics, and they educated me. My sponsor taught me how to read using the book AA Comes of Age because it's got pictures in it. Those pictures invited me to learn about our fellowship. And so he gave me our history book. And when I was able to start reading, he gave me a dictionary. He gave me an 1,850-some page College Webster's thing. Made me read a page a day, and I kept looking for a plot. Boringest book I've ever read. You would think that I'm quite educated. If we went out there and spoke, you'd think I have an education. But what I've been taught is through the AA way of life, how to communicate with people, how to be open to people. And somewhere along the line, that spiritual deficiency that I felt so bad for so long in my life, that spiritual deficiency has been filled, but only for one day. I'm under reprieve. It isn't about all my accomplishments or lack of sober. Those are all nice things. We could all talk about our achievements, couldn't we? But what it's really about is, have I found that quiet place in the sunshine Bill Wilson talked about? Have I got that mind that stopped racing just for a day, just for a minute, just so that I can enjoy the peace of the world around me without needing to take a pill, powder, potion, lotion, or a bottle of booze to make it possible for me? So it's with great pleasure that I'm invited to come here and participate in the first anniversary of the SPG. I think it's really great. I'm glad all those of you that aren't involved in that came to participate in this anniversary party. What a great thing AA is. 2.5 million people worldwide. I just got back from Australia. I just spent Sean and I spent a few days over there doing an emotional sobriety workshop in Perth, Australia. For fun and for free. We don't get paid to do it, but yet we're overpaid. Well, at least I know I am. I go with Sean. I'm overpaid. I invite you, however new you may be, don't take my word for it. Get into the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and find out the truth for yourself. This is my truth. But I don't know what yours is. But I know that it's found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, 12 Steps of 12 Traditions, and AA Comes of Age. That's where it was found for me. Thanks for letting me share.